Good evening. Welcome to our debate featuring the candidates for the 13th Congressional District. This debate coming to you from Brookings Auditorium on the campus of the University of Illinois, Springfield. The debate is a joint effort of AARP, WUIS Public Radio, and Illinois Issues Magazine. I'm Sean Crawford, the WUIS News Director. Joining me on the panel, Bernie Schoenberg, political writer and columnist for the State Journal Register newspaper. The candidates in alphabetical order are Democrat Ann Callis and Republican Representative Rodney Davis. Some ground rules for the debate before we begin tonight. Each candidate will be allowed 2 minutes each for opening and closing statements. For the first part of the debate, candidates will be given 90 seconds to respond to questions with a 15-second opportunity for rebuttal for the first person who answers. In the second half of the debate, we will screen audience questions, and each candidate will have 60 seconds each to respond with no rebuttal. If a time signal is given, please try to wrap up your remarks, and the panel can also follow up on questions if we feel it's warranted. And I would ask our audience to please refrain from any applause or other noise during the debate. Earlier, we had a coin toss that was held to determine which candidate would go first. Representative Davis, your opening statement, 2 minutes, please.
Well, thank you, Sean, and thank you, Bernie, for moderating this event tonight. I'd like to first thank AARP, UIS, and WUIS, and Illinois Issues, and the State Journal Register for letting you out of the building today, too, Bernie. Let me be perfectly clear. I am so proud to be your congressman. It is a job that I take very seriously every single day. And when I still see that Capitol Dome lit up at night, it gives me chills because I know that I've been entrusted by almost 800,000 people in the 13th District of Illinois to vote on their behalf. It is a privilege, and I'm looking forward to the opportunity to go back. When I ran for this office in 2012, I told my constituents that I was going there to govern. And that means working in a bipartisan way to come up with common sense solutions without sacrificing our core values and our core principles. And I am happy to come back and report that we've done that. As the only member of Congress to be appointed to the Farm Bill and the Water Infrastructure Conference Committees, I think it clearly shows that my colleagues think of me as somebody who can sit across the aisle and sit across the table in a bipartisan way to actually come up with common sense solutions that save taxpayers billions. But I will tell you, one of the most important parts of being a member of Congress and one of the most important parts of my job is serving the constituents of Central and Southwestern Illinois. And I'm so proud of that opportunity because not too far from here, for 16 years, I spent time in Congressman Shimkus's office helping constituents break through the bureaucracy of Washington. We have had success story after success story working with individuals. And as a matter of fact, I'm so proud that my office has processed 500 cases for our Central Illinois veterans to make sure that they broke through the bureaucracy of Washington, D.C. Thank you for having me here, and I look forward to the debate.
Judge Callis.
Well, one of the reasons why I'm running for Congress is that I had been a judge for 18 years and chief judge for 7 years. And as chief judge, I was able to bring forth programs and innovations that served the people that I was honored to be elected by. I was able to create the first veterans court in the state of Illinois, helping troubled veterans get back on their feet. I was able to create a foreclosure mediation program, helping close to 200 families to be able to stay in their homes. And I was also able to enforce and reform the court system in Madison County. It was difficult, it was hard to do, but it was the right thing to do. I wanted everyone to believe when they walked through those courthouse doors that they were going to get a fair shake. And having reformed the court system in Madison County, it's time that we reform the way things are done in Washington, D.C. today. It's time that we pass the minimum wage. 6 out of 10 minimum wage earners in the state of Illinois are women, many of them heads of households. It's time we pass the Paycheck Fairness Act. It's time that we elect a Congress that is not intent on serving themselves, but intent on serving the people that we were honored to be elected by. It's time.
Now we'll move on to questions from the panel, and we will continue with our order from the coin toss. That means Representative Davis, the first question you will answer first. And Bernie Schoenberg will answer that. Ask that first question.
Yeah, and this is one of the questions that AARP provided. How would you help Americans save so they can secure their future and live independently as they age?
Well, thank you, Bernie, and thank you again for the AARP core questions, too. This is a very important issue because it brings in a whole variety of opportunities to talk about how important it is for families to save. But we in America and we in Congress have to make sure that the economy is growing so that families have good-paying jobs, so that families have a paycheck to even think about saving and putting together a family budget. We need to pass comprehensive tax reform. We need to make sure that we close loopholes, make sure that tax rates are lowered for everyone, and make sure that America's competitiveness is not hindered due to our tax code when competing against our global competitors. And we also need to make sure that we talk about as many opportunities as we can that families do have to save. I know the president's new plan, his executive action, the MyRA, is another opportunity for families to be able to save. But Bernie, we also have to be very cognizant that there's some personal responsibility that needs to take place when it comes to family saving. And that's something that I would encourage everyone and every family to begin doing. Take advantage of employer opportunities to save. Do what you can to save as much as you can for your family's future. And when we have the opportunities that are available to save, and when we have the opportunities to create good-paying jobs, families are going to put themselves on a path to success, and that's exactly what it means to achieve the American dream.
Judge Kellis.
Well, traveling around our district, I've talked to a lot of people, and I'm 50 years old, and a lot of my contemporaries and people in their 60s are still struggling with student loan debt. Our next big bubble, $1 trillion. So I think there are common sense solutions to tackle our student loan debt, like Senator Durbin and Senator Warren's bill that will allow people to renegotiate their student loan debt at the current rate. And I think that's a good idea and a good path and something that we should work on together to do. Also, we need to grow jobs in our district. I think we have excellent opportunities here with our 9 colleges and universities to join with them, draw out our innovators, create jobs, great green jobs right here that we can do in our district. Also, we have wonderful community colleges and wonderful apprenticeship programs. We can ask our businesses to invest and continue to invest and grow in these programs, joining with our labor so our children can graduate from these programs technologically savvy and skilled and having a good livable wage job waiting for them. Also, we need to strengthen Social Security and Medicare. We don't need to have a change CPI with Social Security. We don't need to raise the retirement age for Social Security, and we don't need to privatize Social Security like the Republican Ryan budget wants to do.
There is a chance for a rebuttal if you wish, Congressman.
Well, I don't ever remember voting for a Ryan budget that addressed anything but saving Social Security. Social Security is a promise that we need to live up to for all of our seniors. We need to make sure that those who are retired or near retirement see no changes to their Social Security that they've been promised throughout their working lifetime, that they have put forth to save. These are the types of opportunities that we need to have an adult conversation. That is exactly what the Ryan budget calls for that I voted for.
Let's move on to our next question, and Judge Kellis, you will start with this answer here. And you mentioned Social Security. How would you protect Social Security for today's older Americans and also strengthen it for future generations?
Well, traveling around this district, I was at a pig roast in Calhoun County, and a woman came up to me, and she grabbed my arm, and she said, please do everything you can do to protect Social Security. And my grandma was an Irish immigrant, and she came to this country and worked as a nurse in Granite City at St. Elizabeth's Hospital all her life. And I saw her rely on her Social Security and be able to live out her days with dignity. So how can we protect Social Security? And I think in a bipartisan way, we can create a bipartisan commission that studies this issue and can strengthen Social Security, not only for our children, but also our grandchildren and for years and years to come. And one way of that is we can leave on the table raising the payroll tax to protect Social Security. What we don't want to do with Social Security is privatize it. And Mr. Davis, in 2012, you did come out for privatizing Social Security when you answered a questionnaire. And that is the wrong direction for our country and not the way we need to go.
Congressman Davis.
That's completely not true. And my votes clearly show I've not been for privatizing Social Security. We have opportunities to discuss bipartisanship, and that is exactly what the budget I voted for calls for. It calls for an adult conversation. It calls for an opportunity to talk about making sure that Social Security is here for this generation, the next generation, and my children's generation. And I'm glad my kids are with me tonight. These are opportunities to get beyond the politics and the polarization and the attacks that come up whenever somebody tries to address the upcoming insolvency of our Social Security system. I have come out in favor of making sure that means testing is on the table. For the life of me, I cannot imagine Bill Gates complaining about giving up his Social Security benefits to save the system for those who rely on it and need it the most.
And Judge Callis, 15 seconds for rebuttal.
Well, Mr. Davis, in a questionnaire with the Christian Coalition, you left on the table and said that you would leave on the table privatizing Social Security.
Well, I guess we move on to the next question. We'll hear more about it. This is to Congressman Davis. How would you put Medicare on stronger financial ground and protect today's older Americans and future retirees from rising health costs?
Well, the Ryan budget that you will hear about tonight is another example of how we actually put a plan of action together to make sure that Medicare as we know it is here for those who are on it and those who are about to be on it, but also here for my children's generation and generations to come. Because we actually laid a path forward that's going to be able to do that and save Medicare as we know it for all generations. And what I want to make sure of is that we have that conversation in a bipartisan manner to do just that. And when we do, then we're going to come up with a plan that's going to save the system that's going to go broke in 12 years. I remember taking my twin boys to kindergarten. And by the time they're seniors in high school, that's all we have. That's all we have left without making some positive movement towards saving Medicare. Because the actuaries say it will be broke and it will be insolvent. And that time, as my daughter is going to graduate this year, it seems like a blink of an eye. We need to actually have that conversation. We need to put a plan of action together like is in the Ryan budget. And those who criticize our plan of action without offering an alternative of their own are actually complicit in Medicare's demise.
Judge Callis.
Well, I've traveled around our district, gone to a lot of senior centers, and seniors like Medicare. They think it works, and they want to strengthen it. So how do we do that? And I think allowing Medicare to negotiate with the drug companies to for prescription costs, to keep a cap on those costs would work. Also, I think the HEAT program, it's a U.S. attorney-generated program that's in several major U.S. cities, and it goes after fraud and abuse in the Medicare and Medicaid system, and it's reaped billions of dollars back to our government. So I think that's two great ideas that we can have to keep Medicare sustainable for the future. Where we don't want to go is the way of the Ryan budget, when the AARP has even said that it does away with the Medicare guarantee. It transfers Medicare from a defined compensation system to a defined benefit system to a defined contribution system, and that is the wrong approach.
Rebuttal for Congressman Davis.
I agree with my opponent that we need to root out waste and fraud, not only in our Medicare system, but throughout the federal government. So that's something that we can stand here and agree on. But clearly, my opponent has not looked at the plan of action that has been put forth by the AARP. It is not a voucher system. This is a system that's going to allow for premium support for future generations so that our future generations like mine and my children's actually have options. And options are not bad things if the goal is to make sure that Medicare as we know it is saved for this generation, the next generation, their generation, and all future generations.
This next question goes to Judge Kellis, and obviously there's elements in it for both of you. And it gets a little political, but I think that's the elephant and the donkey in the room of this race if anybody watches television. As candidates, you two differ on a variety of policy issues, yet your ads get very personal. I'd like each of you with the other person in, sitting next to you to reiterate those ads and say what those ads say and justify to the voting public why this is how you spend your campaign money. Judge Kellis, do you really believe Congressman Davis has this job to allow his colleagues to fly first class and to give him access to a congressional gym when he sleeps in his office in D.C.? And Congressman Davis, do you really believe Judge Kellis was a bad judge and would be a worse member of Congress given the fact that voters have repeatedly returned her to the bench? So, Judge Kellis.
Well, there is a law out there that if our service members fly coach, then so should Congress. And I think Congressman Davis, who had stated he's a leader in Congress, should join with this bill. It's common sense. I mean, my son, when he was flying back to Kuwait, his return was delayed. Bravo Company's return was delayed because they couldn't find an airplane, and then the airplane broke down. They certainly aren't flying first class. And yes, I was absolutely lied about. My daughter, who is in the audience, the only home she's ever known is Troy, Illinois. That's where I raised my children, and that's where I dedicated my life to public service and serving the people of Madison County. So I knew that the lies would come, but that was a surprising one.
Congressman Davis.
Let me be perfectly clear. I have never flown first class on the taxpayer's dime, and I have never in my life spent my own dime flying first class. And it's not just okay to co-sponsor a bill that hasn't been called. I actually voted to make sure that first class wasn't available for members of Congress. These attacks have come from my opponent. These attacks have come from her allies in Washington through groups funded by Nancy Pelosi and the Democrat Campaign Congressional Committee. I kind of wish they would have actually hired somebody better like Aaron Schock to play me in the last one, but I can't ask for everything.
Kellis, each of you argues that you want college to be more affordable. How can costs, including costs of student loans, be brought under control?
Well, I mentioned this before, but I think the $1 trillion of student loan debt that we are facing in this nation needs to be addressed. And I think the Senator Warren and Senator Durbin's bill that allows people to renegotiate their student loans at the current rate should occur. Also, we have 9 colleges and universities in our district. So I think we have a great opportunity to form committees and commissions with our college administrators and with our students to keep our college tuition affordable. Also, I think we should strengthen Pell Grants, not cut Pell Grants like the Ryan budget. And I think those are avenues that we should explore.
Congressman Davis.
The Ryan budget does not cut Pell Grants. And no matter what you will hear from my opponent tonight and after this, I have not voted to cut Pell Grants. I have actually voted to increase Pell Grants. The key is, how do we make those Pell Grants go further for those who are in college right now? And how do we make college more affordable? And this is an issue that's also personal to me and many families in this district because my daughter is going to be attending college next year. These are issues that many families in this district face that we need to take head on. And that's why when I go visit the 8 universities and colleges in my district and the 9 universities and colleges and the 8 community college districts that serve this district, I talk about how do we reduce the overall cost of college tuition. Because it's not just about the student loan rate, which I voted to stop from doubling. It's about making sure that college is more affordable on the front end so those who graduate don't have to pay on the back end. And let me remind everyone here today, too, that the Department of Education, in their own study, has shown that non-teaching positions and compliance positions have grown 50% more over the last 10 years than have instructors at our colleges and universities.
Judge Kellis.
The Ryan budget that Mr. Davis voted for constricts the needs analysis testing, thus reduces the eligibility for Pell Grants, and it freezes, thus cuts Pell Grants.
Well, we've reached the midway point of our debate, so we're going to take a two-minute break here for our stations down the line to have some station identification, and we will come back with questions from our audience and online as well in 2 minutes. Debates featuring the 13th Congressional District candidates, Democrat Ann Callis and Republican Rodney Davis. I'm Sean Crawford, along with Bernie Schoenberg, who are the panelists tonight. First, we're going to now go to, I want to go through some ground rules for you again, because we're changing those slightly. We are now going to go to questions from our audience and those that were submitted online. There is no rebuttal to these questions. We are asking for candidates to give a one-minute response, please. So the first question we're going to start with was Congressman Davis. You will go first. Schools across much of this country are implementing new learning standards known as the Common Core. Do you favor those standards? And also, what role should the federal government play in education?
Well, I have a voting record of making sure that we've tried to make our learning standards much more localized than what they are today. Over the last 10 years, we've heard from teachers, we've heard from administrators, we've heard from parents about the faults of No Child Left Behind. One of the first bills that I had a chance to vote for was the reauthorization of No Child Left Behind, the reauthorization of ESEA. It provided more local control, which I think is what we need. We need the states to have more flexibility so that they don't have to beg the federal government for waivers. The federal government shouldn't be picking winners and losers in our K through 12 education system. But we also have to cut back the rules and regulations that our system has to follow, especially here in Illinois, where the state of Illinois is not living up to its education promises. We need to make sure that we either fund more than 5% at the federal level or cut back the regulations and the rules that are costing school districts hundreds of thousands of dollars and students opportunities to learn.
Judge Callis.
Well, I think Common Core was a good aspirational idea, but traveling around our district, I've heard from teachers. One teacher in DeWitt County came up to me and said that she has to teach Common Core, and she teaches special ed. So I think something was lost in the implementation. So I think we should have more flexibilities for the differences in our school districts. And this issue is personal and close to me because my daughter got her first teaching job, or living her lifelong dream, teaching middle school in the district in Edwardsville. So I agree that Common Core may have been a good idea, but we need to really help our teachers with the implementation and flexibility of trying to move our school districts forward.
This next question comes from the audience and goes to Judge Callis, and there is a Springfield connection. In the next session of Congress, what would or could you do to speed the progress of a high-speed rail system lingering in our state? Obviously, there's some work that's going on right in the middle of Springfield right now.
Sure. I think what we need to do and what approach that we can do is what I always did as chief judge, and that's reaching across the aisle and getting things done. So how can we move this forward? And that is joining with if I'm honored to be elected, the Republican delegation in our state and the Democratic delegation in our state, and also working with Senator Durbin and Senator Kirk so we could bring the infrastructure dollars in here and get this thing moving.
And that's exactly what I hope to continue to do. As somebody who helped push a common sense, bipartisan water infrastructure bill through the Transportation Infrastructure Committee that I serve on, and also through the House and through the Senate, and get to the President's desk, these are provisions that I hope to work on when it comes to our transit systems and our highways. This is an issue that I have a great deal of experience working on right here in Springfield, Illinois. I remember talking with Mayor Hasera about this issue, and the late Mayor Davlin. You know, we need to focus on ensuring that high-speed rail remains a priority and that there are the policies in place and the opportunities to have a fully funded, robust highway and transit program. And that's exactly what I plan to do with my continued service on the Transportation Infrastructure Committee.
Congressman Davis, we'll start with you. Do you support an increase in the federal minimum wage? And if you support an increase only after changes for business regulation, please state in detail what those changes would be.
Well, I do support an increase in the minimum wage, and one would be a tax credit to offset those who are employing those on the minimum wage, because the Congressional Budget Office states clearly that if the minimum wage were to be increased without those offsets to $10.10 an hour, that 500,000 families would lose their job. And many of the universities and colleges here in Illinois have told me they would not be able to hire nearly as many students who want to work to help pay their way through college. These are issues that we need to address. These are issues that America needs to address. But we also have to make sure that we address how do we get families out of minimum wage. And that is exactly what this administration has yet to do. Since 2007, wages for the American families have fallen each and every year. That is unacceptable, because no one who's in a minimum wage job right now, flipping burgers like I used to and shucking French fries like I used to, they don't want to stay there. They want to achieve the American dream like my dad did and like many of you in this room had the opportunity to do also.
Judge Kellis.
It's time we unconditionally raise the minimum wage. I have traveled around this district and spoken to a lot of people, and people are choosing between food and diapers. They're working 2 to 3 jobs, trying to keep their head above the poverty line, and they keep falling further and further behind. 63,000 people in our district, 63,000 people in our district's lives would be improved by raising the minimum wage. $7.6 billion per year will be added to our economy if we raise the minimum wage, and 27 million American lives would be improved if we raise the minimum wage. It's time we do it incrementally and unconditionally.
This one goes to Judge Kellis. Gun violence is a huge problem in our country, the writer says. Polls show that the majority of Americans support mandatory background checks. What is your position on this issue?
Well, I come from a family of gun owners. I respect the Second Amendment. My son is expert on M4 assault rifles, and he just bought his conceal and carry weapon. However, I think we should be able to close the gun hole loophole or the gun show loophole for purchase of guns. Also, when I was chief judge, I was working on this issue, because there are a lot of laws on our books concerning ownership of guns and adjudicated mentally ill. And I brought together a task force with reaching across the aisle again with Republican representatives, Democratic representatives, people in our law enforcement, people that work with domestic violence, and people that work in our mental health communities, to be able to come together, have a free-flowing exchange of what is out there, what laws are out there, and how we can spread this information and move our communities forward.
Congressman.
Judge, that's exactly the approach that I wish the federal government would take. And we missed a golden opportunity to discuss how do we reduce violent crime in America after the Newtown massacre. We had a chance to actually see proposals put forth that were going to not just address the firearm side of the equation, but we're going to also address the mental health issues. And what we saw out of the administration was no action. That was a missed opportunity. I would hope that just as Judge Kellis did in Madison County, that we would be able to do the same at the federal level. And that's why I hope to go back to Washington to continue this debate.
And we'll start this question for Judge Kellis. Campaigns focus on the candidate's plans for what he or she will do in Washington. But realistically, you're only one person, in a 535-person organization. Both sides have deadlocked Congress, crippled the government. Why should voters trust that you can actually do something in that environment?
Well, because I was able to do it in Madison County. I was able to institute real court reforms in our civil justice system in Madison County, lowering significantly the number of class action cases being filed, commensurate with the rest of the state, lowering the number of class and our medical malpractice cases being filed, commensurate with the state, lowering the number of class action cases being filed precipitously. So I was able to do that by reaching across the aisle and getting things done. We attacked the medical malpractice crisis that we were addressing in Madison County by building a bipartisan commissioning, traveling around the state and seeing what we can do. And we were able to enact medical malpractice reform in our county that was able to reduce the number of medical malpractice cases. So I would have that same approach in Washington, D.C. today. There isn't an office door I wouldn't knock on. There isn't a hand I wouldn't shake if I was able to do something to move the people of the 13th Congressional District forward.
Congressman, sorry I flipped the order there, but your response, please.
You were right.
Yeah. That's what I think I've done and what I've shown the constituents of this district in my first 2 years of service. Somebody who has gone to Washington to work across the aisle to get things done. I have passed 3 bills out of the House with 1 becoming law. 2 are held up in the Senate right now. That's the most out of anyone in the freshman class. I was the first freshman to have a bill signed into law. I, again, was the only member of the United States Congress on both the Farm Bill and the Water Infrastructure Conference Committees. Those are the epitome of working across the aisle, getting things done. These were solutions that were put forth that saved taxpayers billions by making good policy and ensuring that we put our country on a better fiscal footing. That's exactly the approach that I'm going to continue to take. I have not only talked about bipartisanship, I have actually made sure that I acted in a bipartisan manner. And just today, I'm proud to get the certificate of approval from a group called No Labels, which is a group of problem solvers in Washington, D.C. that I'm proud to be a part of.
As long as we flipped, I guess I ask this to Congressman Davis.
Yeah. It's fine.
Do you support repealing the so-called free trade deals such as NAFTA and WTO, which this questioner says have cost America millions of manufacturing jobs?
Well, we need to do something about the dwindling manufacturing jobs. If you saw the job reports here in Illinois that were released just today, we saw manufacturing jobs continue to decrease. I'm for free trade, but I'm for fair trade. We have to make sure that America is put first. And how do we do that? We do that by encouraging small manufacturers and reforming our workforce training programs. Make sure that we implement new laws like the LEAP Act that I co-sponsored with my friend Dan Lipinski that's going to encourage businesses to hire more apprentices, to make sure that we rebuild America's manufacturing economy so that we can continue to compete on a global basis. And we also need to have comprehensive tax reform so that we put America in a better place to compete against our neighbors and compete against our global competitors. That's how we create jobs in this economy. That's how we continue to make sure that those who are looking for a job have access to the training that's available for those jobs that are open right now.
I didn't hear if you said if you wanted to repeal any of these trade deals.
I'm for free trade, but I'm for fair trade.
Okay. Judge Kellis?
I would support repealing NAFTA. We need to grow great industrial jobs right here in our district. We need to stop giving corporations tax write-offs that ship our good American jobs overseas, and we need to incentivize corporations and companies for growing good jobs right here in our district, and I'd work tirelessly to do that.
The U.S. has used airstrikes to combat ISIS, but Senator John McCain, among those who says that strategy won't get the job done and believes there need to be boots on the ground there. Polls show the American public opposed to that idea. Your take on how the U.S. should proceed in that part of the world, and we'll go to Judge Kellis.
Well, I do have to separate the personal from the professional in this, and that my son is an Army Ranger. He was deployed to Kuwait. His deployment was extended because of the rapidly deteriorating security situation in Iraq. I did support and do support the president's airstrikes, and whatever we do in that region, it has to be a multilateral approach, not a unilateral approach. So I think we need to strengthen the non-jihadist Sunnis there and really join with the other nations there in the Middle East to really have a multilateral approach to this growing security security threat to our nation.
And just to be clear, you would not support ground troops at this point?
I wouldn't support ground troops at this point, but I think we have to trust our military leaders. And it is a rapidly developing situation, so right now at this point, no. But I can't say in the future, if it still deteriorates there and they recommend ground troops, then I would support our military leaders.
Congressman?
Supporting our military leaders is exactly what I did when I voted to support President Obama's plan of action to use our air, missile, and drone superiority to help our allies on the ground in Iraq and in Syria. It's a plan that was put forth by military leaders, and it was a plan that we were told as Congress that was going to work. And I'm going to wait to hear from those military leaders as to whether or not it's working, and not just from media outlets. We need to make sure we do everything we can to stop the inhumane actions of ISIS. Intelligence estimates put their amount of soldiers at about 31,000. I do believe that the president missed a golden opportunity to help reduce the number of ISIS soldiers when he let them march across the open deserts of Iraq without making a decision. I would hope that he's going to continue to listen to his military leaders, as I will, to make sure that we're going to put our coalition on a path to success and eradicate ISIS, which is the only goal we should be after.
This is to Congressman Davis, and apparently one of those C groups, the different kinds of groups that contribute to political debate these days. Do you support disclosure of names of all political contributors, including those involving nonprofit organizations? Because I know there are some organizations that can now spend a lot of money and their contributors are not disclosed, as campaign contributors to your direct campaign are.
Yes.
And can that get through Congress?
I hope.
Okay. Judge Callis.
Yes, I would support disclosure of all names. I think transparency in these donations should be put forth, and I would absolutely support that. I supported transparency in our justice system in Madison County, and I think transparency just will move our country forward, especially on this issue.
And we'll start with Judge Callis this time. What is the ratio of money you've received from outside the district to money you have received from the citizens of the 13th Congressional District? And to add to that, do you see a problem with outside money, and what changes in campaign finance would you support?
Well, I would, having lived it, I would support campaign finance reform, how that's done. But I'm not sure, but I think that we need campaign finance reform. The millions of dollars that are spent on these elections just draw us out from what we're wanting to do, and that's talking to the people of the 13th Congressional District. The actual ratio, I don't know, but I know the majority of my donors are $50 or less. I'm very proud to have the support across the nation of those donors, and I'm proud to have the support of many of these people in our district. I've traveled around all of our counties and all the cities in our district, and we have coffees, or we'll have a house party, and we raise money, and I think it's just an excellent opportunity to get to know the people of our district.
Congressman?
I don't know the ratio, and we have to think back to when these new campaign finance reform laws were implemented. The goal was to have less money in politics and to have more transparency. And unfortunately, we have now more money in politics and less transparency. And our race is an example of the outside spending. My campaign has been outspent by my opponent and her allies by a very large margin. You know, these are campaigns that I believe should be focused on the candidates. And unfortunately, because of the influx of outside influences and money, it takes the focus away from the candidates and what we're talking about and what we're planning to do to serve the next term of Congress.
For Congressman Davis, what do you intend to do regarding our broken, I'm using air quotes, infrastructure in the country?
Oh, I intend to make sure that I help construct a new highway and transit reauthorization package that's going to bring in a portfolio of funding sources. I really think our next mission to the moon here in America should be to make America energy independent. We have the ability to become energy independent and sell the surpluses overseas, just like many countries in the Middle East do with oil. We can do that, and we can take revenues from making America energy independent and invest it in infrastructure. Infrastructure is where we create good-paying jobs in this country. Infrastructure is where we need to come together in a bipartisan way, like we did on the water infrastructure bill that I will remind everybody passed our committee with no dissension. Many people don't think that happens in Washington anymore, but I helped craft a plan that passed the floor of the House with 4 no votes, and 2 of them vote no on everything, so they don't count.
Judge Callis on infrastructure.
Well, what I don't think we should do is what the Republicans and Mr. Davis in Congress did and kick the can down the road for the transportation bill just to have it in next spring. And it should be a 5-year definitive bill that would bring to our labor unions and our people in our district some definitive planning so they can plan on infrastructure projects. And that's what I would fight for. What can we do to bring good labor jobs, infrastructure projects right here in our district? And I think we have, again, excellent opportunities with our wonderful labor unions in our district that help with our apprenticeship programs, joining with our businesses so our children can graduate from these programs technologically savvy and skilled and having a job waiting for them.
This one will go to Judge Callis. How big a role should coal play in the energy future of America and Illinois, and is burning coal good for the environment?
Well, I think that we don't have to have a black or white issues in this coal discussion. I think the FutureGen project is an excellent opportunity for people in our district to have good prevailing wage jobs, and I would support the FutureGen project with clean burning coal. I also do think that the emissions from the White House, the emissions that he put forth, are a little too restrictive to grow good coal jobs here. But I was happy to see that Illinois is number one in renewable energy sources, and I think that we could continue to develop in an all-of-the-above approach, growing great green jobs right here in our district with our 9 colleges and universities, drawing out our innovators, joining with them with our local businesses, and growing good green jobs and starting new businesses right here. So it would be an all-of-the-above approach.
Congressman.
Coal is extremely important to the 13th District of Illinois, and one of the reasons that I've served in Congress is because I saw the impact of a signature on a piece of paper in Washington and what it had on my local economy. When Peabody Mine No. 10 shut down less than 30 miles away from here in the early 90s because it became overnight cheaper to bring in coal from out west via train than to dig it and ship it over the highway by an electric conveyor belt. It's a decision that cost our local economy greatly, and the mayor of Taylorville, Greg Brotherton, is in the audience tonight. And I know the mayor at the time was very distraught of whether or not we were going to be able to recover. But Taylorville did, and I'm proud of what Taylorville has done. But we have to fight the president's new proposed restrictions to coal-burning fire plants, coal-burning power plants, because if we don't, it will lead to the closure of 3 power plants that employ many members of organized labor right here in the 13th District at CWLP, in Coffeen and in Kincaid. And if we don't have those good-paying jobs, some of the best-paying jobs in those counties, then our counties are going to continue to suffer by another signature on a piece of paper in Washington, and that is unacceptable.
It's time now for our closing statements, and since Representative Davis went first in the opening remarks, Judge Callis, we will start with you. 2 minutes, please.
Well, another reason why I'm running for Congress are my children. They are my inspiration. They both are dedicating their lives to public service. I sent both my children to public schools in Troy, Illinois, in the Triad School District, where they were raised and where a community that I loved. And my daughter has been able to attain her lifelong dream of being a teacher. She got her first teaching job teaching middle school in the district at a public school in Edwardsville, Illinois. My son graduated from Triad High School, valedictorian, a great athlete. He was quarterback. He went on to Cornell University. And instead of going to New York City and making a lot of money, and there's nothing wrong with that, but he chose to serve his country and he enlisted in the Army. When I was contemplating whether to get in this race, I knew that I would be personally and professionally excoriated. I knew that my my career as a judge would be twisted and trashed, something I'm so proud of. But when I saw him graduate as a second lieutenant at Fort Benning, and I saw how proud he was, I saw that he wasn't afraid to serve his country, so I shouldn't be afraid to serve mine. So I came back home, and I resigned, and I got in this race, and I don't regret it for a minute, because I feel blessed that I found my path in life, and that's helping people. And I will end with the fact that I am the mother of a teacher and the mother of a soldier. And if I am honored to be elected by you, I will fight for our teachers. I'll fight for our soldiers. I'll fight to protect Medicare and Social Security. I'll fight for our communities that have been left behind and ignored for way too long. I'll fight for our students, and I'll fight for you.
Congressman, 2 minutes, please.
Well, I'd like to thank the sponsors once again for hosting this event tonight. This is an opportunity for both of us to sit here and discuss what our visions are for America's future. And I'm glad that my opponent and me both want to serve because of our children. It's about making sure that we put America on a path to fiscal prosperity. It's about making sure that America begins the process of paying down the unimaginable $17 trillion debt that's been incurred by many decisions that were made long before I even had the opportunity to walk the halls of Congress. This is a debate that we in America have opportunities that other countries only wish they would have, because we in America get a chance to choose our own leaders. I love the process and the debate. I'm glad that we're both able to sit here and talk about what it means to be a member of Congress. It has been such a blessing over the last 2 years to serve you in Washington, D.C. I made campaign commitments in 2012 that I believe that we have fulfilled, and fulfilled greatly. I talked about bipartisanship. I talked about governing. I talked about working across the aisle to get things done. And my record clearly shows that I've been able to do that, at the same time saving taxpayers billions of dollars and reducing our deficit spending to the lowest levels since World War II. These are the paths forward that many in Congress are chosen to put forth and to act on, knowing full well that we're going to have to make tough decisions that we're going to be criticized on and possibly used against us politically. But those are exactly the tough decisions that this district sent me to Washington to make, and I look forward to going back again to do exactly the same thing. Thank you.
That will conclude our debate featuring the candidates for the 13th Congressional District, Republican Rodney Davis and Democrat Ann Callis. The event, a partnership involving AARP Illinois, WUIS Public Radio, and Springfield and Illinois Issues Magazine. I want to thank our candidates and our audience, both watching live and listening on the radio. Thanks also to Bernie Schoenberg, political writer and columnist for the State Journal Register newspaper. I'm Sean Crawford. Thanks for being with us.